Over on patreon.com, we have got a lot of new exclusive Bowery Boys audio for our super fans, including, of course, our regular Patreon-only show called Side Streets.
And at the $5.5 level and above, I've got a whole episode of bonus scenes from my recent Stories of Flushing show, with many more interesting bits of history. Then at the $10 Gilded Age level, you'll get audio from my interview with author Eric J. Dolan, recorded at the New York Historical Society. We're talking privateers, pirates, and the American Revolution.
And that's not all. At that same level, you also get exclusive merchandise, new shows a couple of days before everybody else, and you get all of our podcasts ad-free.
You won't even hear this message. That's all on patreon.com/Bowery Boys.
Your support helps us keep the show running. Thank you so much.
Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. We live in a world where it's possible to work ourselves 24/7. Even when you're away from the office, work still follows you on your smartphone. Being constantly connected can make us feel like we're getting a lot done. My guest today makes the case that we'd all be better off if we practiced the ancient tradition of the Sabbath. His name is Aaron Edelheit, and he's the author of the book, The Hard Break, The Case for a 24/6 Lifestyle. We begin our show discussing the burnout Aaron experienced as an entrepreneur working nonstop, how he rediscovered the Jewish tradition of the Sabbath, how it changed his life, and even helped him sell his business for over $200 million. Along the way, we explore America's workaholism, how it's making us miserable and less productive, and costing businesses money. Aaron then digs into how you can start implementing a Sabbath practice regardless of your beliefs, and the benefits that accrue to your life, your health, your creativity, and even your bottom line when you take a weekly rest. After the show's over, check out the show notes at aom.is/hardbreak. Aaron joins me now via clearcast.io. Aaron Edelheit, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you just put out a book called The Hard Break, The Case for the 24/6 Lifestyle, not the 24/7. Before we get to the impetus behind, well, actually, this is the impetus behind the book. You start out the book talking about a moment in your life. You are you're a finance guy. You've been doing and you have running investment properties, a company that manages investment properties. So super, you know, motivated, type A. But there's this moment you found yourself. You were sobbing in the shower, and you just thought your whole world was falling apart. So tell us about that moment.
Yeah. So, it was actually kind of a pivotal moment in my life. So it's, you know, it's normally you're not, people aren't too keen to talk about when they have kind of a emotional breakdown, but you know, this is actually before I started owning rental properties and managing them, but I had started managing money for people and investing it in the stock market at an early age of 23. And started seeing really tremendous success, started in 1998. And for 4 years, even through the dot-com crisis, I was a golden god. I averaged like 25% a year positive returns. The whole market was going down. And I formed my own very small hedge fund. And things looked to be taking off. And then suddenly a bunch of things started happening, really just kind of life things where I had a relationship, personal relationship, and we broke up and I had taken on a business partner. We started fighting and then that broke up. And then I got sick and doctors didn't know what was wrong with me. And eventually it was kind of misdiagnosed appendicitis. And out of this, and then suddenly my, you know, not surprisingly, my business returns started falling. And suddenly I wasn't outperforming. And I was still very young at this point, as you know, 27, 28. And I didn't realize it's actually normal to underperform for some periods of time. I mean, I wasn't mature enough. Warren Buffett has had periods where he hasn't done so well, and it's actually normal. But the combination of all those events really put me in a tailspin, and I found myself crying in the shower and kind of not knowing what to do. And, you know, I kind of got myself out of it. And, you know, my first thought really was, well, I got to double down on work, right? My returns, my results are not what I expect. So I've got to do more. I've got to work even harder. And what I found is that wasn't helping anything. And it really wasn't, it took me, you know, a little bit, but it wasn't until really out of desperation that I said to myself, well, maybe the problem isn't that I'm not working enough, but maybe the problem is that I'm working too much and I'm too invested in it. And so really out of desperation, I decided in 2005, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn off, and at this point it was BlackBerry. I'm going to turn off my BlackBerry on Friday night, right before I go to bed. I'm going to try to make it till noon on Saturday. This is how addicted, I'm still addicted to my phone, but this is how addicted I was at the time. It seemed like a heroic task, right? Like, how can I possibly have my phone off for 4 or 5 hours? And I did it. And then after a couple weeks, I said, well, maybe I can make it till 2 or 3. And then after, and I did. And then after a couple months, I said, why can't I do it a whole day? And really out of that kind of experiment, it just transformed my whole life. And now I've been doing it for over 13 years. It's the best thing in my life. And it enabled me to have all of the success that I had after. So what caused me to start crying in the shower? My portfolio was down 5%. That's ridiculous, right? Right? Like there's just absolutely no perspective there. So now fast forward to 2008, when you have real problems, right? The financial crisis, markets are down 30 or 40%. But now instead, I have a stronger foundation, which we can talk about later. And now I'm a stronger person. So I was able to say, wait a minute, there's opportunity here. And so in the heart of the financial crisis, started buying foreclosed homes, fixing them up and renting them out in 2009, and grew that from 16 rental homes to 2,500. And I was able to then, you know, as I say in the book, up and down through the book, all the whole time, shutting completely off from work and technology from Friday to Saturday night. And then selling the company for $263 million to a public real estate investment trust. And I can tell you is that if it wasn't for me taking off a day every week, I would not have been able to find that opportunity, have the stamina to see it through, to go through the ups and downs. It would not have been possible. So after I sold the company, I started working on this book. It took me 3.5 years, and I wanted to definitively make the case. Because the other thing that I saw from my company is that I saw all these work practices inside and outside the company, you know, from, you know, having about 100 employees to, you know, over 126 investors, a board of directors, investment bankers, contractors, et cetera.
So, okay. So, but you basically implemented a Sabbath practice in your life.
That's right.
Before we get there, before we talk about what a Sabbath is and what it can look like, let's talk about the problem that you were facing, because you're not the only one this is happening to, where you work all the time, you're not getting the results you think you should get, so you think the solution is, well, I should just double down on work. And you highlight all this research that says that Americans, particularly you know, middle class, upper class Americans, people who are doing like knowledge type, like lawyers, doctors, creative types, they feel like they're working more than ever. So how many hours are Americans working on average these days?
So it's not so much that we're working more hours per se, but it's that we're constantly connected. That's one of the biggest problems. We're constantly connected and we're on call. So if you think about it, when you have your phone on and you're connected to your phone and your computer and your email, you're basically on call to every business contact and every social contact that you've almost ever met through Facebook, through Twitter, through email, through Slack. Everyone can reach you at any time. And our brains are addicted to the point to check it. We may not immediately respond, but everyone has access to us. The research is very clear. We are not made to be on call every waking moment of the day. And it's an absurd comment. It's an absurd, it's an absurdity. Like, right? Like, how are we, why would we allow that? How could that possibly be good? And the reason, one of the reasons I spent so much time working on the book is there's 200 footnotes in this book. I had to remove dozens because my editor told me, you're not writing a scientific paper. The evidence is overwhelming that what we're doing to ourselves from a health, a mental health, happiness, creativity, productivity, it's not working. And we know this, right? We intuitively kind of know that something's wrong. And we see it in society as well. People are more anxious. There's an anxiety epidemic going on. People are angrier. We're arguably living in the best time ever to be alive in terms of health, in terms of lifespan, in terms of violence, in terms of, you know, opportunity. There is inequality. It doesn't mean that it's all wonderful, but if you look in the vast history, we should be dancing in the streets by how good the world is, but we're not acting like it.
No, yeah, for sure. And I mean, so okay, there's emotional, psychological consequence. You talk about the physical health consequences of us constantly being connected and constantly, yeah, like you work, like you might not work more hours, but like, it's just like, you're always constantly checking in, like it's sucking up your bandwidth. There's also like physical health consequence. Like you experienced something like that.
Oh yeah. No, well, would you want an 80% increase in coronary risk?
Right. No, yeah.
All you have to do is work more than 10 hours a day. That's according to 50 years of research. And it's really bad for women. Women who work an average of 60 hours a week are three times as likely to develop heart disease, cancer, arthritis, and diabetes. There's a link between long work hours and depression, heart disease, type 2 diabetes. You're more likely to become an alcoholic. Then just think about injuries. There's a German study that showed that after the eighth or ninth hour of work, you have a substantially higher risk of injury on the job. You're more likely, if you work more than 12 hours a day or more than 40 hours a week, to have neck, shoulder, and back disorders. You know, the world WHO, the World Health Organization, estimates that health, mental illness, and substance abuse cost employers something like $100 billion a year. Like, this is all translating into, and then the problem seems to get worse. So the average stress level is, you know, for millennials on a scale of 1 to 10, it's 5.4. And for boomers, it's 4.7. And for the older generation, it's 3.7. So like, and then you look at in college health clinics are being overrun with mental health cases. It's growing by double-digit percentages every year. The number one way that middle school kids die is from suicide. It used to be car accidents. Like, so a lot of this stuff is just like, whoa. You know, like there's not only physical, but there's this really mental consequence of overworking, of being connected all the time. And it's that we're not built and set up for this. And it's like anything. It's not, this doesn't mean that you just, you know, go back to using like a rotary phone, right? It's just that anything taken in its extreme is not going to be good.
And then it also seems there's like a lack of perspective. And you also highlight, you know, some startup culture that exists where it's either you succeed or you're a complete failure if your startup doesn't succeed. And all these guys, you know, there's been a couple high profile cases of, you know, startup founders whose startup didn't do so well and they ended up committing suicide.
That's right. And this is probably the number one reason that I wrote the book is there is this pernicious myth that you need to grind and burn yourself out and go to a level that is almost like martyrdom to succeed. And it's not true. And not only is it not true, but there are tremendous negative consequences to doing this. Family life, mental health, physical. And I profile a series of people, including one of the co-founders of Facebook, that has severe regret. Dustin Moskowitz, severe regret that the way he worked. And he said, I could have done a better job. I could have been a better boss. And in fact, he took those lessons. And when he co-founded his next company, Asana, which is, I believe, the number one company to work for in America. And I think they have a $3 or $4 billion valuation. Ironically, it's a productivity software tool. They have, you work like 9 to 5. There is, you know, strong encouragement on mental well-being and on setting boundaries at work. It is a new company. And he started it from scratch, and now it's, you know, it's being very successful. There are a number of people in this and companies throughout the book, as you know from reading it, that profile that they either burned themselves out, which they hadn't, or what they've done is they're super successful because they take a Sabbath.
Well, and so, I mean, that's the other interesting thing. So there's not only health, both physical and psychological consequences of overworking, but like you show the research, like actually working more makes you less productive. Like it does the exact opposite of what you'd think it would do.
That's exactly right. And what happens is that there's, you know, this isn't surprising if you think about it. Look, if I needed to work on a project and I'm on a deadline, can I for a week or two grind it out and really put in the Superman type hours and get it done? Yes, absolutely. But if research has shown that you keep that up for more than a month or two and your productivity starts to decline. And then eventually it starts declining further than if you just worked 40 hours a day. And one of the more interesting things that I profile in the book was the Stanford researcher who found extensive details in World War I. And why this is so interesting is, so World War I breaks out and Britain needs to compete with the German war machine and produce more munitions. And so they had started implementing all these positive labor rules to protect the workforce after the Industrial Revolution. But war breaks out and they said, hey, sorry, this is life or death. They took away all the labor rules. And they start producing munitions, but it's not enough. So they form a commission and they say, commission, we want you to look into the data and we want you to, you know, do a survey and let us know, how do we produce more munitions? And so they did a detailed, they grabbed every piece of data they could. And they came back with a pretty shocking recommendation. And that was that workers needed to work less and not more. And they found that the best workers were those that didn't, not the ones who worked 7 days a week, but those that worked 6 days a week and had a Sunday Sabbath were the most productive. And what they found is that the longer that people worked the 7 days, the more likely they were to get injured, the more likely they were to make a mistake, the more likely they were to get sick, to get tired. And so, you know, this type of study has been repeated a number of times. And it's not so surprising. And now what I argue is the Sabbath, an institution that has been around for thousands of years, is arguably more important today than it's ever been. Because if you think about it, our brain is a muscle just like anything else. And we're constantly plugged in. And we're constantly connected and we're constantly using it. And what's happening is we're not giving our brain a break. And we're having a lot of negative mental health aspects that we've already talked about. But on the other side, why are we doing it? We're doing it because we want to achieve more. We want to be more successful. We want to, you know, we want to provide for our families, right? Well, an interesting thing, and this is what's so fascinating after doing a deep dive in this, is that you have a tradition that's thousands of years old. The latest in neuroscience shows that when you're relaxing, when you're not actively engaging your brain, there's a part of your brain that goes into overdrive, and that's called the default mode network. Now, what does the default mode network do? The default mode network takes in the information and the experiences that you have, processes them, and tries to form patterns. So what does that mean? You ever have the proverbial idea in the shower? Are you ever going for a walk and all of a sudden a solution to a problem hits you? That's the default mode network. And so what does that mean for today? How do you be successful today? Well, you've got to be more creative. You've got to be more innovative. You've got to be a better problem solver. It's not about taking in more information. It's about what do you do with information. And so if you're not giving yourself a break, you're not giving your brain a break, you're actually hurting your chances to succeed in today's world.
We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. It's wedding season, and while weddings are all about the bride and groom, they're also a chance for you to look your best. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into wedding season looking like $1 million, even though suits start at just $499. It's easier than ever to be the best dressed with Indochino. Order your custom suits now, and they'll be ready for wedding season. The process of customizing a suit on Indochino, very easy to do. It's also a lot of fun. I've talked about my navy blue suit I've gotten from Indochino. First off, you can decide how the jacket is, how you want the pockets on the jacket to be, how you want the lapels, the vent on the back, the lining on the pants. You can decide you want pleats or no pleats. I went no pleats on my pants on this one. And then you do the measuring process. You'll need someone to help you, but they have this very easy-to-follow guide. Send that all in a few weeks, you have a custom made-to-measure suit sent directly to your door, and you're going to pay about the same price for a suit that you'd pay for an off-the-rack suit at a department store. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code manliness to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code manliness. Check it out today. Have you always struggled with finding time to manage your finances? At the end of a busy week, the last thing you want to do is spend time budgeting all of your expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions you no longer use. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. My favorite feature on Rocket Money is finding those unwanted subscriptions. If you're like me, you have a bunch of those things you signed up for but forgot about, streaming services, newsletters, maybe some fitness plans. You just connect your account to the app, Rocket Money finds the recurring subscription fees, and then you can easily cancel them from the app. It's a really cool, cool service. They also have a service that can help you lower your bill. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with the customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. That's a lot of money. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/manliness. That's rocketmoney.com/manliness, rocketmoney.com/manliness. Have you ever been to an event where you just had to get the best seats? Like maybe it was a concert for your favorite band, or maybe it was an important game for your favorite team. Well, to do that, you had to set an alarm to get the tickets as soon as they went on sale. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you are trying to hire for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free. at ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best people fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/manliness, M-A-N-L-I-N-E-S-S. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. There have been a lot of amazing people as guests on this podcast, but what if you want to go deeper? If you're looking somewhere to learn from the most remarkable people, that's Masterclass. Masterclass offers over 200 classes to pick from with new classes added every month, and they have over 180 world-class instructors, and a lot of them are former AOM podcast guests. For example, Chris Voss has a class on negotiation, Jocko Willink has a class on leadership, and Malcolm Gladwell has a class on writing. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. One class that I've really enjoyed is the one with Chris Voss on negotiation. My favorite lesson in that class was the lesson on tactical empathy, something we talked about in the podcast that we did with him a long time ago, but he goes in deeper with this. And besides just the lectures, you get exercises so you can actually put this stuff into practice. Right now, listeners will get an additional 15% off annual membership at masterclass.com/AOM. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/AOM. masterclass.com/AOM. And now back to the show. Okay, so let's obviously we're overworking, not good for you. Taking breaks are actually beneficial. Let's talk about this idea of Sabbath. As you said, it's been around for thousands of years. You are Jewish, but at the time you weren't practicing, you weren't very observant. But then you had that moment in the shower and then you doubled down. That didn't work. So you started implementing, because you started on Friday night. That's typically when Jewish people start their Sabbath. Not using your phone. So for our listeners who aren't familiar, can you walk us through like what the Jewish Sabbath observant is like? What does that look like?
So it's different for different Jews. And so mine is, you know, the Jewish Sabbath is from sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. Christian Sabbath is on Sunday. What I use my Sabbath to do is Friday night, I turn off my phone. I turn off my computer. I turn off my laptop. What I try to do is not talk about work or do any work on that Saturday, on that Friday night to Saturday. Now, personally, I will drive somewhere. I will watch TV. But because I have 3 small children, it's more likely to be Frozen or some other like Pixar type movie or Bubble Guppies or something, but I won't watch anything on business or politics. And if I drive, it'll go to meet friends. And that is my Sabbath. What I'll try to do is go for a hike. One of my favorite things is taking a nap. It literally makes me feel like a king. I love it. And what I try to do is just really connect with my family and friends. During that Sabbath, there's other Jews who it's a much more religious day. They, you know, some of the more religious Jews will turn off all like electricity, or they'll leave certain lights on and stuff like that. For me, it's more of a you know, I'm taking the more personal side for me to just connect with myself and my family.
And besides Judaism and Christianity, are there other religions that have a practice of taking a break from work?
Well, I know that just inside, you know, Christianity, you know, like Mormons also do it. And I believe, I didn't do so much research in this, but there is a Buddhist day, you know, kind of like a inner calm kind of rest day that happens a couple times a month. But my focus has just been what works on me. And the reason I called the book The Hard Break is what I do is it's taking the concept of the Sabbath and showing a bunch of different ways that people do it. And so it's not, I don't believe it's necessarily a Jewish or Christian thing. It's, the idea is born out of this. But I profile, like there's some people in the book that what they do is, you know, there's a lot of peer pressure at work to, you know, stay at work and work long hours. And some people say, hey, at 5 p.m., I'm done. and I'm not reachable, and they go pick up their kids. They may play sports with them, help them with their homework, have a meal together, put them in their room, put them to bed, etc. And then they turn back on 8 at 8:30. And so their hard break every week is that three and a half hours. I don't think it's ideal. I think it is good to have a whole day. In fact, research has shown that cortisol, which is a marker of stress in your body, that it takes about 24 hours if you have elevated levels of cortisol for it to return to normal. Like, it's really interesting to find all this research that just kind of ties back into, the idea of taking a whole day. But there are different ways to practice it. And it doesn't have to be religious. Like Brad Feld, for example, one of the most prominent venture capitalists, one of the most successful, his is strictly a secular digital Sabbath. So there's no religious connotation to his day of rest.
So yeah, let's talk about some of these people you highlight, because a lot of people are afraid of taking that break from work, whether it's just turning off the phone or not being reachable, because they think it'll put them behind the competition. But yeah, you highlight several successful business people who have made taking complete time off once a week part of the routine. So you mentioned that the gentleman just now. You also talk about Clay Christensen, the guy who wrote The Innovator's Dilemma, practicing Mormon. And for his entire career, even when he was working at a consulting company, he didn't work on Sundays or Saturdays.
Yeah, no. So this is what's really interesting, is that it's very important. The Sabbath isn't broccoli. It's not like a vegetable you have to take. This is, to me, it's ice cream. I get a vacation day every week. And not only do I get a vacation day, but this vacation day, it has been the key to my success. So what I wanted to do is not only share all the research, the overwhelming amount of research that shows how it doesn't work, how we're working doesn't work, and how bad it is for you, but I wanted to profile people that are not only doing it, but say that it is the key to their success. Like Brad Feld, prominent venture capitalist, said he's doing the best work he's ever done since he implemented this. You mentioned about Clayton Christensen and all of the success that he has done, has seen. Think of the best example is Chick-fil-A.
Oh, yeah. I love Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. They're closed every Sunday. How many times do you drive by a Chick-fil-A on Sunday and go, oh, I wish they were open? Like, right? But they're closed every Sunday. The average Chick-fil-A does four times the revenue of the average KFC, even though KFC is open every day. They're about to be the third largest fast food company in the country, and they do $9 billion in sales. And if you talk to the executives of Chick-fil-A, they say the key to their success is the Sabbath. And I profile in the book why, and how all of their practices in their company kind of flow down from this idea that everyone gets a day off. They are more successful because of it. And you mentioned Clayton Christensen. When he first started his career, he was at Boston Consulting Group, who kind of frowned on taking a day off. You think about consultants, they're working all the time. It's a very tough job. You have to travel as well. And so it's interesting to profile Clayton's story, where in the 60s or 70s, he was struggling at Boston Consulting Group, and he stuck to his Sabbath practice, to the Boston Consulting Group of today, because the Boston Consulting Group reached a level where the senior partners were like, we're having a problem retaining employees. They're burning out. They're using our company as a stepping stone. And how do we retain our employees? How do we have them see that this is a place to stay? And so a Harvard professor came in and said, hey, I'd like to start an experiment. We'd like to try and see what happens if some of your consultants take a day off. And so the senior partners were like, yes, you'll find a team, and we'll monitor them and see how they do. And so the Harvard professor tries to go in and can't find anyone who wants a day off, which is kind of totally absurd. If you and I were to take a time machine of any time 20, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, and you were to come in and say to the person, hey, I want you to take a paid time off and not work. The average person in the past would be, yes, that sounds amazing. But only today when it's like, no, I can't do that. It's going to hurt my career.
Or just looks bad, right? Like,
yeah, it's
like
you're bad.
You're an immoral person, right? Like a less virtuous person if you take time off.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So eventually the senior partners have to intervene. They find one team. And what happens? Well, this team starts saying, my God, I feel so refreshed. Yeah, this is really wonderful. You know, I'm having these new ideas. And then they start talking amongst each other and say, hey, why are we having that 3-hour meeting? Can't it be 30 minutes? And then people start backing each other up and they start saying, oh, now I understand why this person does the job this way. And they start working better together. And what happens? They're more refreshed. They have better ideas. They're more efficient and they're working better together. What is the quality of their output? Substantially better. All of a sudden, other people in their office said, wait a minute, they look happier. How do I get in on this? And so the senior partners say, whoa, there's something really here. And so they did something, you know, very enlightened, which is to say they went in and they said, you know what? We're going to roll this out to the entire company. But of course, and you got to love this, only consultants, they come up with a name about this. They say, we're going to call this predictable time off. You know, I call it the Sabbath. Yeah. You know, they're like, we invented. And Boston Consulting Group is like the number 3 or number 4 best company to work for. Retention in the company has surged. Employee satisfaction, and they're you know, absolutely benefiting from this, from the qualitative output to inside the company, the quality of a work and life and the happiness of their employees.
Well, speaking of that culture shift that's happened, you know, you mentioned if you went back in a time machine 20 years ago and someone came to you and said, do you want time off? People are like, yes. But now it's like, no, like I'm going to work, I'm going to rise and grind, I'm going to hustle. Like that's the ethos today. But I mean, like I was talking to my wife about this, like 20 years ago, Office Space came out, that movie.
Yes.
And like that sort of, that's how people felt about work. It's like, well, if I had $1 million, I would do nothing. Like I don't want to work all the time. Now it's like, I don't think that would resonate with a lot of young people. Because they're like, well, of course you should always work. Work is amazing. And it's, you should hustle and rise and grind.
Well, I think that, you know, what you have to look as is to why, what's driving this? What I think what's driving this is signaling. It's wearing it on a sleeve, or it's this, you look at other people that are doing it and they kind of enforce it. And it's all about looks and it's not about output. All we should care about are what are the results that we want? How do we want not only the results from our business life, but our personal life as well? And so it's like, I have 3 young kids and my wife has taken the phone from my hand and thrown it in the front bushes of our house. That's how upset she's been. And still with how I use my phone, she complains that she only sees the top of my head. It has helped save my marriage and my relationship with my wife that she knows at least one day a week, she gets all of me, not a distracted me. There was a wonderful article in the Atlantic talking about how parents are now spending more time than they've ever spent with their children. But the quality of that time is garbage. It sucks. Why? Because they're distracted. They're not really there and our kids know it. When I sit on the floor with my daughter, my 5-year-old daughter, and we're playing, and then she does something cute and I want to take a picture, or I want to turn on her favorite song. So I go to my phone, right? Because everything's on my phone. And I go to do it. And then I look, oh, I got an email. Got a text. I wonder what's going on. And it's 5-10 seconds. And my daughter will turn to me and say, Papa, will you play with me? And my first reaction is like, I am playing with you. I'm here. I'm right here. But she knows she doesn't have my full attention. And on that Sabbath day, there is no distraction. I am there. And I can't tell you is that it just, everything in life comes from relationships. All of our satisfaction. Look, now, obviously, past a certain dollar amount, you want to make sure that you have a roof over your head and you have a job and, you know, you're paying the bills and stuff. But once you get past that, all of the satisfaction in life comes from relationships. So don't you want to have one day where you just get to focus on those relationships the most important? Don't you want to just have a lunch or a dinner with friends or family and not be distracted or feel like you have to go run to something else and something else and something else?
No, yeah, I think a lot of people would like to feel that. So let's get to some brass tacks here of how we can start implementing this in our lives. So how do you go about setting up a Sabbath for you, for somebody? Because I imagine it takes some prep work to get it,
yes,
make sure in place. So what does that look like?
So the number one thing I recommend is baby steps, is don't jump in with both feet. I don't think it works with diets. I don't think it works with, many things that you start going to the gym and you're going to be like, I'm working out every day. You're not going to keep it up. It's not sustainable. How do you make this sustainable in your life? And to me, it's you take baby steps. So how did it work for me? I started with 4 hours on a Saturday morning, having my phone and computer off. And so what I recommend is people start, doing it and prep beforehand. Let people know, where you're going to be, that you're going to be off. You set the expectation in advance. Anything that you need to get done, you get done in advance. Then there's just tips and tricks that you can do. A lot of people don't realize this, but let's say you didn't want to have your phone completely off. You can put do not disturb on your phone. Turn off all notifications. And if you put up do not disturb, at least on the iPhone, if someone calls you twice within 5 minutes, it'll ring through. So if you really need to have that phone on, you can keep it on. The other things, just tricks, I have, as I said, I have three small kids. Two of them have some ongoing health issues. They're doing well, but there's been times where my wife and I have to separate on a Sabbath for a variety of reasons. And what we'll do, we'll switch phones. There's nothing on my wife's phone there's no work email, there's no Twitter, none of the social media is mine. And it's just a phone. You can also get, if you think of the movie, you can get kind of like an old flip phone to use just for the Sabbath, And there's a bunch of little things to think about, like how are you going, because what keeps people connected is fear, right? The fear of what happens if X happens or someone needs to reach me or, one, I can tell you very little happens on Saturday. And from a business perspective, there's very little. And if you're so critical that you need to be on 7 days a week, something's wrong either with your job or the business that you're running, because that is not sustainable. And what happens if you get sick or get hit by a truck or, your business is going away? You're describing there's no redundancy in your business. And, going back to is that this is what a lot of very smart entrepreneurs are starting to realize. Building redundancy into your business is actually really good. So giving people days off is ways to find where there are problems in your system. that if someone can't take a day off, then that's a problem. But so those are some of the ways. The other ways is make it enjoyable. Do this. Remember, this is not meant to be, you know, kind of this painful medicine you have to take. This is supposed to be a vacation. This is supposed to be a day of rest. What are you going to do on these days? Some of the days I do is I just read for pleasure. I'm not reading to improve myself. Constantly I'm, you know, reading blogs, you know, like The Art of Manliness, or, you know, I'm reading books and productivity stuff and trying to, how am I going to make myself better and better? You know what I don't do on Sabbath? On the Sabbath? I don't do any of that. I read like science fiction and stuff purely for fun. I take a nap. I go for a hike. If I'm going to do an activity, there's just one activity. Because remember, the Sabbath is meant to be different than every other day. So the last thing you want to do is turn off your phone and then say, I'm going to pack in 7 or 8 activities and I'm going to run from one thing to another. That's not a Sabbath.
Right. You don't want to make it a chore.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's meant to be this. You're getting time back. You're getting time back. You're getting this gift of time, which we all know is just going flying by so fast. Enjoy it.
No, for sure. Yeah. Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Like, make it free, like, and make it a refreshing day for yourself. So yeah, I mean, like, so it sounds like a lot of things you can do, reconnect with family. And that could be one of the things you talk about is like, call your parents, right? Because you probably don't see your parents. Use that day where you call them, or FaceTime, whatever it is you want to do with that. I didn't know that. She talked about in Jewish tradition, like Sabbath is a day to have sex, which I had no clue.
That's exactly
that
right.
That was a thing.
So I profiled Senator Joseph Lieberman, who was almost vice president. And he talks about it in his book. You know, again, it comes from this idea that it's supposed to be enjoyable, that it's actually a commandment. You're actually supposed to have sex on the Sabbath. So when you talk about, for me at least, you know, connecting with your family, connecting with your spouse, connecting with friends, it's meant to be enjoyable. So, and the other thing is, make it your own. What do you not get to do during the week that you would like to do? There are some people who are like, you know what I love to do? I love to go out and garden. Or, I, you know, they've asked me like, hey, is it okay if I mow the lawn? And it's like, I really enjoy it and I zone out. And I'm like, yes. You know, I always wondered, why do so many Silicon Valley founders and venture capitalists are surfers? And then it hit me after talking to them of why they're constantly rushing out to do it. That's their little Sabbath. What can't you do when you're surfing? You're not on your phone. You're not working. You're in this kind of zone. You're into nature. That's another thing. Go out into nature. Go, you know, go for a hike. Go do something that is out there that you know, will fulfill your soul.
So taking daily or weekly breaks is something we can do easily, or I mean, maybe not easily at the beginning, but it can be done. But you also talk about within the Jewish tradition, there's this idea of sabbaticals where you take an extended break. That sounds like a vacation, but unfortunately more and more Americans are taking less and less vacation.
Yeah, that's right. Like Americans gave up something like 700 million paid vacation days. And then you're reading in the Wall Street Journal articles about workcations, where you bring your work on vacation. Now, we know from the research that this is not good. It's not good for you. It's not good for the business. It's not good for productivity. We know this. It's not good for your health. We know all of this. And yet people are doing it. And it's like, and they're giving up payback. And so what I do is I highlight in the book one entrepreneur, one successful CEO, who's instituted something called paid vacations. He pays people to turn off on their vacation. It's a kind of an absurd thing. You know, and it brings me back to the, you know, one thing we didn't touch on was like sports. You know, we can learn a lot from sports, because sports is actually moving in the opposite direction that business is moving in, because sports is studying the athlete's performance and realizing that breaks, hard breaks, are actually critical to peak athletic performance. So that's why you saw where the Chicago Cubs almost lost the World Series, because their reliever had almost thrown too many pitches. And you find that, you know, rock climbers argue about, you know, not whether you should take a break, but how many days is the right amount. You have someone, you know, you have NFL players who are saying, oh, well, you know, JJ Watt for the Houston Texans during the season, he says that he tries to sleep 9 to 10 hours a day. You have LeBron James that once playoffs come, he institutes something called Zero Dark 30, who turns off all devices, turns off his social media, everything. Why? So he can focus and he can be present.
Yeah, I think the reason, I mean, you talked about it earlier, the reason why Americans aren't taking paid vacations is they're afraid that if they do, they're like a boss will find out that they don't really do anything, right? Like, I mean, the company won't grind to a halt without me. But as you said earlier, that's also a problem. If your company does grind to a halt without you, well, that's a problem too.
Yeah. But you know, it's not only that. I think it's, they're trying to signal, hey, I'm a real company person. I'm committed to this organization. Look, I'm even responding on my vacation. And I don't think that that's how, I think it's just signaling. But again, if you want to be more successful in your work and you want to rise in an organization or you want your company to rise, it's all about having the best ideas. It's solving problems. It's being creative. If you're constantly connected, you're not giving your brain the chance to be that person. You know, and one of the best examples I cite in the book is probably the most innovative musical to come around in decades, Hamilton. How was it created? Well, Lin-Manuel Miranda had a successful Broadway show, decides he's going to go on vacation. He's at the airport bookstore and picks up the biography of Hamilton by Ron Chernow and brings it with him on vacation. Now, who in their right mind would come up with a musical about a Treasury Secretary of the United States rapping with a multiracial cast, and that would take the world by storm? Well, you can only come up with something like that if you're giving your brain the chance and you're on vacation. So take vacation. It's good for you. It's good for business. It's good for your career.
I love it. So yeah. So, but how do you talk to your employer about this? Because maybe you have a boss or you work for a company where they have, you know, policies where they want you to take off, they want you to take vacation, and that's there. But what if you work at a place that doesn't have that, where the ethos is you work all the time, even when you're on vacation, you got to be reachable. How do you have that conversation with your employer and said, maybe that's not the best thing for the company by having that policy?
Well, you could give them my book. That's one.
There you go.
But two is you have to ask yourself, do you want to work for that company? You know, is this the right company? Is this the right culture I want to be around? Is this going to bring out the best in me? And is this going to be best for my family and my personal life? I mean, you can try and talk to your boss, say, hey, look, I'm committed. I'm working. I'm a hard worker, but I just need to, you know, come this time, I'm going to be off. You can say that. And if you get a negative reaction, then you have to decide, do you want to be at that company? But, you know, I work on Sunday. Sunday's a work day for me. And just think about it. If I can't get my work done in 6 days a week, something's wrong.
No, for sure. Okay, so it's a gut check. So you can do the conversation. If it doesn't go the way you want, you might have to decide, well, this isn't a great place for me, and you go find something else.
I mean, I think that's your real... That's your alternatives. And luckily now we're in the type of economy and shortage of workers, shortage of skilled workers, where this is the time that, you know, if ever there was a time for you to, you know, think about, you know, where you want to be and how you want to live your life. You know, now's the time to do it. And I think employers are starting to realize this, but I think beyond just the employment situation, I think there more and more employers are realizing that something has to change. They're realizing that burnout is a problem, that sickness, that mistakes at work, that it's just not helpful. Because more and more of our jobs is about processing information, problem solving, and being creative.
Well, Aaron, this has been a great conversation. Where can people go to learn more about the book and your work?
So they can go to thehardbreak.com is my website. They can also find my book on Amazon, The Hard Break, The Case for a 24/6 Lifestyle. They can also find me on Twitter at Aaron Value, A-A-R-O-N, and then Value.
Fantastic. Well, Aaron Edelheit, thanks so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest today was Aaron Edelheit. He's the author of the book, The Hard Break, The Case for a 24/6 Lifestyle. It's available on Amazon.com. Also, check out our show notes at aom.is/hardbreak, where you can find links to resources where you can delve deeper into this topic. Well, that wraps up another edition of the AOM podcast. Check out our website, artofmanliness.com, where you can see all of our podcast archives. There are over 500 episodes there, as well as thousands of articles we've written over the years about relationships. We even have articles about the Sabbath on there, a spiritual discipline, fitness, you name it, we've got it. And if you haven't done so already, I'd appreciate it if you take 1 minute to give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. It helps out a lot. And if you've done that already, thank you. Please consider sharing the show with a friend or family member you would think would get something out of it. As always, thank you for the continued support. Until next time, this is Brett McKay reminding you not only listen to the AOM podcast, but put what you've heard into action.